College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It gives me a lot of happiness. I have never had this guest before. I'm very excited to have him on. CP, the franchise founder of Knicks Fan TV, welcome to the program.
And Lori, thanks for having me on. Pleasure to be on with you.
So I have to say, CP, I wanted to talk to you about the Knicks and the new, obviously, Mike Brown, the head coach, about free agency, about all of that. And we're going to get to that. But there was a very cool event for Knicks fans yesterday on Saturday, Knicks Twitter Day, this basketball tournament. So for people who are not aware of what was going on, Can you explain to the good people, the listeners who were not there, about this event?
Yeah, sure. And so one thing about the Knicks fan, and it's the primary reason why I started my platform, Knicks Fan TV, 9 years ago now, is that the passion, it rings through globally and across many platforms. The radio was one for me when I was growing up as a kid, and now that we're in the digital age, it's all across social media. So on every social platform, you have budding communities of Knicks fans that are just coming together. They're talking about the team. They're trash talking each other. The hot takes, the highlights, the lowlights, we're all in this group together. And on Twitter, it's very popular. So you have a lot of personalities. You have a lot of people that are always, you know, interacting with each other. One of which is Ben Stiller, who is right. A mainstay at the Garden. And so we decided that we wanted to come together and have a basketball tournament where we could put our money where our mouth is and entertain the people and you know, fight for bragging rights and a trophy. And so Ben was kind enough to help sponsor this event in coordination with Sean Geddes, who's another Knicks Twitter personality. Mm-hmm. And we had a great time. We played basketball at the Brooklyn Stuy Dome in Bedford-Stuyvesant, 8 teams in an 8-team tournament. But it was Team Knicks Fan TV, Lori, that came out victorious. So right now I'm looking at the trophy and shining it up as we speak.
That is part of why I thought of having you on. I thought I would talk to, you know, I could have talked to the guys at Knicks Film School. I've had them on, you know, I've had Benji on before. I could have done that, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to talk to the champion. And so Knicks Fan TV and CP won this tournament. And just to build on something you said, I think that Knicks fans get mocked sometimes by national media or other fan bases when they see what they think is an over-the-top reaction to whether it's a first game of a playoff series or, you know, it could be a game in February. And there is an element of sometimes, you know, we hear this in the NFL sometimes, a guy scores a touchdown and someone will say like, oh, act like you've been there before. And the thing I think that maybe national media or other fan bases miss about Knicks fans is that for a lot of us, unless you remember 1973 really well, for a lot of us, the truth is, you haven't been there before. And
for about
the last 20 years, until the last 5 years with Leon Rose, Tom Thibodeau, and this run, most of it was, you know, there was the 90s Knicks, which were, that was a great era and very fun. But most of the last 20 years were embarrassing. And I don't know how many times I would come on the radio and announce that I'm divorcing the Knicks. We have irreconcilable differences, only to get sucked back into Vegas Summer League and right. You know, back right there again. But I think that when I see Knicks Twitter Day and everything there, it's like there's no, I don't think there are other fan bases that have that same sense of, hey, it's the off season. Let's get, you know, hundreds of people together with Ben Stiller in a gym in Brooklyn and just do this for the love of the Knicks.
Yeah, and listen, I as I said, I started Knicks Fan TV 9 years ago. I'm now doing this now on a full-time basis for the last 2 years, and that is based on the passion of this fan base. And I say it all the time, Lori, we are unmatched in when it comes to our passion and our loyalty to our teams, not just here in New York, but in all of sports. I'll put us up against anybody. And so when people say that, you know, act like you've been here before, well, why would we want to take the fun out of our fandom? It just makes no sense. Fan is short for fanatic. And so anytime the Knicks fan wants to be exuberant or passionate about their team, I'm never going to knock that. Yes, we want to have a lot of fun and we want to be respectful. No, we don't want to, you know, condone the trashing of the Pacer fan. That was just an isolated thing with a couple of knuckleheads. But by and large, when I travel the world, Lori, whether it's outside of Madison Square Garden, it's down to Atlanta, it's across the coast to Los Angeles, and I'm bonding with fellow diehard, and I call them delusional because I am one, and I'm bonding with these people. Like, there's nothing like that in life. It's an incredible feeling, and it's an incredible connection. And that is how you have things like Knicks Twitter Day, which is a byproduct of our fandom. There's nothing like this in sports.
Talking to CP, the franchise founder of Knicks Fan TV. By the way, yes, we are radio here on WFAN, but you can also listen to us on Odyssey, iHeartRadio, TuneIn apps. We have the apps also. Anyway, all right, let's get to the news of the week. So after a prolonged search, the Knicks finally land on a new head coach in Mike Brown. From, you know, as you think about this hire, I don't think it was necessarily the sexy hire, the exciting hire, but I understand why the Knicks went in this direction. From your perspective, though, how will Mike Brown be different than Tom Thibodeau? What does he bring that's different?
Well, the one thing that you want to see, Lori, is that they have a longer term experience in which the offense is utilized to maximize on the talent that we have here. And when I say longer term, I say that because, look, for a good part of the regular season last season, the Knicks had a top five offense in the league under Tom Thibodeau. When it got to the playoffs, though, and maybe even prior to that, they started to sputter a bit. They became a bit more predictable, a bit more isolation heavy. When teams would switch more athletic wings onto Karl Anthony Towns, yeah, he wasn't as effective as he was earlier in the season. And then once they got into the playoffs, it just seemed like every possession offensively for the Knicks was just, you know, a nail biter. They had to scratch and claw for everything. And so I think with the Knicks, what they're looking for with Mike Brown and hopefully with his staff is that he can unlock that offense for them. When he became the coach of the year for the second time with the Sacramento Kings, they boasted the number one rated offense in the NBA. They utilized Domantas Sabonis as a playmaking big man. I think that's something that with Karl Anthony Towns you can unlock. Something that an offense where it doesn't put as much pressure or responsibility on Jalen Brunson to make everything happen, and you can actually accentuate on his strengths, which at times can be off the ball as a three-point shooter, as someone who a Karl Anthony Towns or maybe a Mikal Bridges is making plays for. So with Mike Brown, the Knicks want to be able to diversify the offense, but most importantly, Lori, is maximize the investments that they've made, in particular with Karl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges on this team.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I think it was starting even in January that some of the smarter opposing coaches in this league figured out that change that you just mentioned, and they started to guard Carl with an athletic wing and put their center against Josh Hart and not respecting his offensive game. And it's like the Knicks offense went from being this beautiful game, this dynamic offense, to being kind of stuck in the mud and back to ISO ball and all of that. And it just got so hard to get a bucket. And by the time we got through the playoffs, I think the Knicks, as a starting five, that group were getting outplayed by everybody else's starting fives. And you're right, with everything they've invested in Karl Anthony Towns to make that trade, somehow they have to figure out how to get better minutes out of the time when that Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns are on the court together. In terms of Mike Brown, though, also, as you've been thinking about this, what are some other kind of positives that you think he brings to this market based on his experience?
Yeah, well, for Mike Brown, I think league-wide, he comes highly recommended as someone who has a great reputation around the league, and he's going to bring that experience. And as you said, opening with that segment on Brown, no, it's not the sexy pick. I think some people wanted to see, you know, the Knicks finding a young upstart coach that's the next Joe Mazzulla, somebody that we're not thinking about. But when you really think about the situation here and the pressure cooker that this next Knicks coach be under, having fallen just two games short of the NBA Finals, and the foundation that Tom Thibodeau laid, that's heavy for a young head coach. Mm-hmm. So you need somebody in here with experience. And so with Mike Brown, he's going to be able to bring that experience. He has a good reputation. He has a fire about him. When you look at those clips and those highlights of him in those practices, he's going to fight for his guys. And that's what the Knicks are going to need as well. And, you know, from a player development standpoint, I think it's also an area of emphasis that the Knicks really want to hone in on because of the restrictions with the new CBA in terms of how they build that roster. And they believe that Mike Brown, in tandem with the staff that he brings in, will be able to help utilize not just that starting five, but go deeper into the bench, find the proper rotations that can help make this team a better overall team and not just a Brunson and Towns, my turn, your turn type of offense.
You mentioned the staff he's bringing in. Have you heard anything in terms of some names that he'll bring in versus names from the current staff that he keeps?
Yeah, so James Borrego is one guy to keep an eye out on. That's someone who did interview for the head coaching job with the Knicks. He's currently an associate head coach with the New Orleans Pelicans. It seems like they're not too pleased in terms of letting him go for a lateral move to the Knicks. So they may have a little bit of a roadblock there. It's worth watching. Mark Stein just today or yesterday, I believe, also mentioned two other names in Darvin Ham, the former head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Darvin Ham also served under Mike Budenholzer with the Milwaukee Bucks. And then also a guy who has a really good reputation around the league in Phil Handy. Phil Handy has worked with Mike Brown both at the Lakers as well as with the Cavaliers. And so he's someone that Mike Brown is very familiar with and someone from a player development standpoint that many around the league hold in a high regard. Now, as far as the holdovers, what I'm hearing is that, you could have some holdovers from the Tibbs regime that would be under the Brown regime. Yes, Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's father, I think you can expect him to have some sort of role on the coaching staff. But yeah, that's what we're hearing so far in terms of how the staff will be made.
Talking to CP, the franchise, founder of Knicks Fan TV, about the Knicks. And all right, so what were your thoughts on free agency and the Knicks getting Jordan Clarkson and Gershon Yabusele and obviously a scoring guard and a sort of a versatile big man from the Sixers in those two? Were you surprised that the Knicks and Leon Rose were able to sign those two players before they even announced having a head coach?
Yeah, well, that's part of the reputation that Leon Rose and World Wide West has. I think that has come to benefit the Knicks in this situation where they didn't even have a head coach in place and they were able to land some free agents. But also, if you think about it, for these guys on vet minimum contracts, I was speaking to an NBA capologist His name is Keith Smith. Does very really good work. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, but I know who he is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So Keith was on my show a couple weeks ago, and he talked about, you know, based on NBA teams that he speaks to, the criteria that they look at when they are vet minimum guys is this team competing for something? Are there minutes to be had? And what city is it? And I think for the Knicks, they check all the boxes. You know, this is a championship caliber team, especially with how wide open the East is. You know that, well, at least these incoming free agents are going to be pitched on the fact that, look, we know who Tibbs is. Mm-hmm. We know who he was, his reputation. But here, we want to go deeper into our rotations. We want to be able to maximize our talent. So you will have an opportunity to get minutes here, because a lot of guys coming in on vet minimum deals are going to be looking to get longer term, more lucrative contracts and maybe, you know, rebound from a bad situation. And then city wise, listen, it's New York. It's going to check the box. So for a guy like a Jordan Clarkson, who and off the court is into fashion and being out in limelight, look, New York is right there in his wheelhouse. But, you know, for a guy like Gershon Yabusele as well, who, you know, the Knicks did not have a coach in place, for them to get him away from Philadelphia, who, according to him, may have undervalued him, I think it's a good deal. What a lot of people need to understand, especially in this climate, is that the Knicks do not have a lot of money to spend to go out there and get these marquee names. And for us here at Knicks Fan TV, we are studying the salary cap on a daily basis. We're bringing in the experts who know this thing inside and out. So going into free agency, we knew what to expect and that these would be lower market deals. But you have a situation where in Jordan Clarkson's case, he gets bought out from his deal with the Utah Jazz. And the Knicks are fortunate enough to pick him up based on the relationship that has been repaired between Rich Paul of Clutch Sports and Leon Rose. And then with Gershon Yabusele, they spent a little bit more in terms of the taxpayer mid-level exception.
Yeah, although I did see that not a big surprise the Knicks would do this, but that he agreed to just a little bit less. So that should allow the Knicks, as they fill out the roster, one more veteran minimum contract as well as a second-round pick contract. Any rumors you're hearing on somebody else for that last veteran minimum spot?
Not me personally, not at the moment, but what's out there, we've heard some interest on Ben Simmons. Our guy Ian Begley has reported that the Knicks have checked in on Ben Simmons. I think the backup point guard spot is probably the most important to fill right now, especially for a team with championship caliber expectations. They really need another playmaker who can set guys up. A veteran like a Malcolm Brogdon is someone who appeals to me. He recently played with the Washington Wizards. You know, Chris Paul, look, he's up there in age and a lot of people like him, but I think a guy like a Chris Paul is likely to stay out west where his family is.
Yep.
And then a Ben Simmons, we just finished our show at Knicks Fan TV and the our audience was pretty split on whether or not they would want a Ben Simmons on a veteran minimum deal. But when you think about his size, his playmaking potential, and his ability to defend, he's someone that can help both as potentially a backup playmaker as well as a backup wing. So that could be a name that's worthwhile watching.
Yeah, if you only need 10, 12 minutes a game on some nights from him, as you point out, especially if you're talking about a backcourt that will feature at times some of these smaller lineups with Brunson and Deuce McBride and Jordan Clarkson, to have an oversized guard who can play defense to complement any of those guys might not be a bad thing. All right, last one before I let you go. How much do you think that James Dolan had to do with this coaching decision in terms of letting go Tom Thibodeau and making a decision on the new hire? How much do you think the owner had to do with that? And does it even matter?
Yeah, well, I think, Lori, when the Knicks come into the news in controversial fashion, James Dolan is always going to be the pinata, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's going to be the person everybody points to. It's all his fault. It's all his fault. What I can tell you is that the organization had been, there was frustrations with Tom Thibodeau. And I think that it had reached the point where they felt like there was no longer going to be a healthy working relationship. They're looking for a coach that was going to be more collaborative, with the front office, someone who is going to emphasize player development. And Tom Thibodeau, it may not be a fault of his, but he has his own style of getting things done. And what people have to understand is that the owner of this team that is worth $8, $10 billion, who's paying this coach $30 million, is sitting right there by the team bench every single night in the regular season and in the postseason. It's his team, Lori. So, you know, when you're running a business and you're asking this guy to cut checks for these big investments, you better believe he's going to be involved if things are not going the way that he thinks it should be. Now, I do believe that Leon Rose also had a hand in this. I also believe World Wide West was probably consulting on this, and mm-hmm. and they came to a decision as a group. James Dolan, yes, he did sit in on the exit meetings, and maybe after the output that he got from the players, he said maybe he recommended to Leon Rose to say, hey, you know, let's move in a different direction. So to me, I don't think we should be shocked that he would be involved here. I'm sure he was, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, just put this on him like it's some knee-jerk thing that's going to doom the Knicks. No, the Knicks needed an upgrade at the head coach. It was time to make the change. And we'll see how successful Mike Brown can be as his 32nd head coach of the team.
All right. CP the franchise. Appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you down the road. Thanks so much.
Okay, Lori, thanks a lot. It was great to speak to you. Thank you.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.